Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. This past Monday, October 19th, 2020, is the corollary to the famous American Revolution's shot heard round the world on April 19th, 1775. October 19th, 1781 was the world turned upside down when British redcoats marched out of Yorktown, Virginia that day in defeat 239 years ago. Its army band fifes and drumming that popular song for all the world to know that the American rabble had won the revolution. Fast forward a couple of centuries to a brand new millennium in its 20th year and America's 59th presidential election. The revolution has frayed considerably, as it had nearly a century afterward in a vicious civil war against slavery and secession. This 59th presidential election year is a so far political civil war about democracy itself. Tonight, two elderly white guys verbally joust for the presidency. The incumbent is a raging tyrant. The challenger, a guy named Joe, is not. A starting point for the debate is why the current president wants to rip away universal medical care during a dreadfully deadly pandemic. Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington, plans to bypass tonight's presidential debate. And here's what he says. What reason could I possibly have to hate myself enough to watch today's presidential debate featuring uniquely awful Donald Trump? To make sure he's a lying sociopath? To see if he's a worse choice than Joe Biden? To gain useful insights into American politics? In truth, there is no point. Nothing will be revealed that we don't already know so thoroughly that we can barely stand to hear it again. We could cancel the today's debate and lose nothing. Hell, we'd gain precious moments of our lives we might otherwise be tempted to waste. Presidential debates can matter under four conditions. If the election is close, many voters are undecided, one or both candidates are unknown, or partisanship is low. Trump exacerbates the limits of debates with his pathological lying, constant interruptions, and degrading of the information function. Everything that a voter could care to know is so widely accessible now that debates at best add nothing and serve as a venue for spreading misinformation. If no one is learning from debates and no viewers are changing their minds, why are we still doing this? Debates are now bad entertainment for people whose favorite TV show is politics, and they can make do elsewhere, watch reruns of The West Wing or something. The contentious and chaos, coupled with the outrageousness of the Trump presidency, creates an opening to rid ourselves of the silly spectacle that debates have become, not only in 2020, but for good. That was Dr. Robert Brake and why he is going to bypass tonight's debate. And now something I wrote with the irresistibly elegant title, Dump Trump. America is always at war with itself. It is a battleground of disparity. Political equity and liberty have not been easy achievements, nor justice anything but a bloody war between those who would extend democracy and those who would suppress it. The current political climate in the USA is one of incendiary revision, of savage descent to public ignorance and intolerance, never quite so revealing as the current mendacious conflict between medicine and politics over the corona pandemic. Serious, almost morbid attention is paid to pathological pieties and prejudices of religious zealots, racial supremacists, and far-right ideologues, as well as just plain criminals, all of whom act at the extreme edge of the national dialogue and reduce it to a medieval level while manipulating the democratic process to ultimately eradicate it. It will take a long time to sufficiently repair the near-mortal damage to democracy by the Humpty-Trumpy imposition of quasi-dictatorial chaos and criminality over governance, distinguished by rabid prejudice and raw tyranny. Henry Adams, heir apparent to the revolutionary Adams family, said a century ago, "I do not regret I have not yet 100 years to live. The United States will then be more corrupt than Rome under Caligula, more corrupt than the Church under Pope Leo X, more corrupt than France under the Regency." The USA has recently allowed into its pinnacle of power the same calumnious breed who were slave traders and slave owners from the nation's dark past, who would quite likely be resurgent Hitlers, Stalins, and Mussolinis in our future if the current maladroit, malevolent despotism is not terminated swiftly and determinatively. To paraphrase a projection by Astoria gay liberationist Daniel Robbins, several election cycles ago, what do these have in common? SS, KKK, GOP. They all talk about betterment through prejudice and hate. When a few dictate what is right for the majority and take rights away from others like Jews, blacks, and gays, think about who is next. The more that get excluded, the more of the majority will stand accused. And that was Dan Robbins. The tenor of this interminable 2020 election has been more iniquitously ugly than perhaps since the 1860 election of Abraham Lincoln plunged the diverging nation into a civil war that quite obviously killed, wounded, and devastated multitudes more Americans than any of its other wars. It would almost seem as though the ogres and monsters of Halloween are all on one side, and their possible exorcism by earnestly hopeful do-good spirits of All Saints Day on the other. Donald Trump is the 666 president, literally the mark of the beast, a narcissistic, Mephistophelian, misanthropic demagogue of fake putrescence, avatar of untruth and fakery, who has in a single term as president disunited the states of America. As president, he is a grotesque comic book caricature, such as the Hulk, except there is no other side of his impersona, a human ogre of grossly obese ego. From the first moment of his distorted inaugural, Trump has not only proved to be the worst president in American history, he has unforgivably sullied the office of the presidency. Perhaps his worst crime against honesty and decency is any sort of claim to be either. Trump has been the most despicable as well as the most despised president. He projects hatred and violence, the dark angst negative of everything that is flawed and fragile constitutionally. He portrays himself as the only American above the law. Conversely, he is the crime boss eroding the rule of law and truth. There is not enough soap on earth to wash out his mouth of lies. Of all the rash, venal, and lunatic remarks Donald Trump has made to vilify his presidency, perhaps the most chilling as well as obscene has been his gleeful boast, "I love war." That seems to have been mostly overlooked or intentionally disregarded among the rest of his bombastic barrage of spiteful rubbish. But it is the one to be most concerned about, because election of a president has always been also choosing a wartime dictator. From the moment of Trump's startling election, the most consistent concern has been his proximity to the nuclear trigger. The doomsday clock of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists was moved forward to 2 minutes before midnight on Trump's inauguration day for the first time since the end of the Cold War. And it is now at 100 seconds to midnight since the start of 2020. The fact that Trump as president can unilaterally unleash America's nuclear arsenal without any checks or balances has horrified quite a few, including top military brass who must comply with his order. One general claimed he would not obey an unlawful order to destroy the world, which presupposes a corollary question of what exactly would constitute a lawful order to obliterate humanity. Another possibility is a megalomaniac's wet dream. What if indeed Trump does lose the 2020 election, which he blatantly claims would be a shambolic hoax? If he has to be forced to concede defeat, his presidency will yet have 2 months residency in the White House. Getting even, which plays very much into Trump's bloated vanity, not to mention the unbearable shame of being what he despises most, a loser, just might be enough of a trigger to annihilate an ungrateful world. Such a possibility does indeed make Donald Trump a plague on all our houses. And that was something I wrote. Dump Trump. And now again, by Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington. POTUS the Mostus. Latvian poet Eli Segal wrote the world's shortest poem, I.Y. An American poet, Ogden Nash, countered with, Fleas, Adam, Adam. Sometimes retitled by Smart Alex as, On the Antiquity of Microbes. My short poem nominee is POTUS the Mostus, sins, that is. Consider the seven deadly sins in the order usually listed by Christian theologians. Number one, pride, see Jeremiah 9:23-24. Or, our I-alone-can-fix-it leader, Donald Trump, possesses few gifts other than showmanship, which he has aplenty. Our me-first leader revels in the pride of a con man, proudly wearing his MAGA cap and hugging our flag. I'll spare you more details. Number two, avarice, Hebrews 13:5. From the beginning, Trump parlayed his real estate smarts and quest for power to accumulate questionable wealth. Just consider his October 17, 2019 proposal to host the G7 summit at his Doral site, or his March 2020 ban on European visits to the U.S., excluding the United Kingdom, where he owns 3 golf courses. Toss in the illegal use of Trump Foundation donations, the tax cut money grab, the $200,000 initiation fee at Mar-a-Lago for access to POTUS, and his blatant abuse of the Emoluments Clause, Article 1, Section 9, and, well, you get the picture. Number three, envy, Proverbs 14-30. Trump resents Barack Obama and frequently bashes and undoes Obama's programs, but he does admire tyrants like Putin, Kim Jong-un, and Turkish thug Recep Erdogan, and, according to Republican Senator Jeff Flake, Trump even used Joseph Stalin's words to attack American press freedom. Enough said. Number four, wrath, Romans 12:19. Trump often explodes in anger, especially at those who don't provide personal loyalty to him, while he conveniently forgets about the Constitution and our country. Recall his wrathful comments about former Attorney General Jeff Sessions and numerous staff in his revolving door White House. Temperamental Trump has even trashed longtime associate John Kelly and excoriated his loyal to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and former House Speaker Paul Ryan, among others. And has even mocked a disabled reporter as he berated the press, the enemy of the people. Trump deliberately indulges in the politics of rage, which unfortunately commands attention and is hard to refute. Expect more of the same during his reelection campaign. Number five, lust, 2 Timothy 2:22. Just recall his hooker payoffs and the Access Hollywood tape, which reveals what body part women would let him grab, and he's expressed a desire to date his own daughter, hardly serving as a role model for our youth. Number 6, gluttony, Corinthians 10:31. Trump is one of those never enough guys. There's never enough money, women, wives, Kentucky Fried Chicken, or chocolate cake. Number 7, sloth, Proverbs 6:6. POTUS is a vastly ignorant and lazy leader, preferring to watch Fox News much of the day and ponder new ways to sell himself. He is setting a record for presidential golfing, as well as lies. Exceptionally unwilling to put in the time to properly do his job, Trump uses his first 5 hours of a typical day for executive time, watching TV, making phone calls, tweeting, and calling spur-of-the-moment meetings. No one is sure that there's any actual work completed. Trump is apparently too busy pardoning former Celebrity Apprentice guests and corrupting the American government to adequately address the coronavirus pandemic. He has proposed slapdash solutions while flaunting his vast absence of leadership. He's not even in the loop on critical decisions regarding testing and other emergency measures, and has advocated ridiculous measures like fig leaf funding, border control measures to contain COVID-19, disbanding of the NSC pandemic team in May 2018, overruling CDC and cutting its funds, and claiming the Democrats are rooting for the coronavirus. That's slothful, flailing incompetence. Looks like Trump manages an impressive 0 for 7 in complying with the 7 deadly sins. He is so absurd that he practically satirizes himself. I should probably give him the benefit of the doubt. He simply doesn't know what the 7 deadly sins are. But that makes me wonder, why exactly does Trump get such high approval and so many votes from white Christian evangelicals? And that was by Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington. And as I might have read this one before, but I think it deserves to be read again. So there you have it. And now, John Reed. Today, October 22nd, is John Reed's 133rd birthday. Oregon's unofficial poet laureate, Walt Curtis, wrote a short centennial biography of John Reed in 1987, which was published jointly by the Clinton Street Quarterly in Portland and the North Coast Times Eagle in Astoria. John Reed by Walt Curtis, and this is more or less the preface to his story. John Reed, the father of modern journalism, is perhaps the most notorious, charismatic literary figure of the 20th century. Born in Portland, Oregon, he is known worldwide for 10 Days That Shook the World, the definitive eyewitness account of the November 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, which ushered in the modern Soviet state, the most important event of the century. Reed became a communist, a fact that constantly overshadowed his brief career as a writer. His life was active, accomplished, and yet so incomplete that he truly becomes a conundrum, a puzzle. I see his overall life as an unfinished symphony, a tapestry with threads still unwoven and dangling. He shot across our literary skies like a meteor, a restless fireball of intellectual energy, and he was gone. He can fairly be compared with Jack London and Thomas Wolfe. Had he survived his bout with typhus in 1920, his later biography would have been fascinating. Many have theorized what his critical position might have been regarding the hardening of Soviet bureaucracy and Stalin, who had not emerged by Reed's death. Revered as a saint of the revolution, he has also been labeled a commie dupe. The red herring still exists. John Reed deserves reading. He ought not to be relegated to a footnote in the history books. Whatever his actual achievements during his short lifetime, he takes on great symbolic significance today. No Reed College in Portland was not named after him. And that was by Walt Curtis, who writes poetry and prose. He is a continual presence on Portland listener sponsor Radio KBOO, which is KMUN's parent and big sister both. He has long been regarded as Oregon's unofficial poet laureate. And John Reed's death from typhus in 1920 might very well be as a result of the worldwide pandemic of 1918-1920. In the poem by Andrew Berger Kiss, John Reed at worldshaker.com. Let your soul have peace, John Reed, whether you belong in Kremlin's wall or back home in Oregon. Our mission will move on. Your cheerful soul would jump for joy, as in days of Harvard's youth, sensing that behind you stand determined legions whose aim, like yours, is to change our world through art. Cheer up, John Reed, for millions of us are yet unborn. Your restless soul must know this. Our day of glory is sure to come. And that was written by Andrew Berger Kiss, who is a poet and psychiatrist. And he wrote it in October 1999. And now, a poem by Carolyn Dunn, John Q. Public, A Railing and Lament. We're tired of public meetings and sick to death of talk. We've got a feeling like a mule is just about to balk. Don't tell us we, the people, are listened to in this land. We all know that the power is in the rich man's hand. They feed us lies from the White House, and by, top judges are also liars who don't so much as try to cover blatant policies in their partisan disgraces. They leave court in the dark of night to hide their shameful faces. Elections are for sale, popular votes, and all right farce. It's backroom deals and all day spin, and neither can be parsed. Candidates are managed till they're choked right at the throat. The media asks no questions, and their viewers do not vote. We're out of gas, we're out of oil, the very things we use to make our plastic doodads, run our cars, and grow our food. No one's to blame, it seems, and yet it's everybody's fault. Our country's broke and vicious, and it's grinding to a halt. We're tired of town meetings and marches through our town. We're tired of raised hopes that are consistently knocked down. Start planning families and stop buying those massive cars. Throw out the bums, and after that, we can try to heal the stars. And that was by Carolyn Dunn, John Q. Public, A Railing and Lament. And this is Michael McCusker. The engineer is Dylan Hauser-Schalk. Today, October 22nd, is also my younger brother's natal day. Quite a few impatient citizens seem to be complaining of pandemic fatigue. They apparently want to restart, whatever that might be. They might be forgetting that death is only once, and it is forever. The USA is in a third surge of COVID-19. The daily death rate is rapidly escalating. Protecting yourself protects everybody else. Lock down and mask up. Don't surrender.
Gather there, all Just go.